Wayne and Kelly Maine's twin sons came into their lives via a private adoption from a distant family member. They named the boys Jonas and Wyatt, but from a very tender age, it appeared that Wyatt was different. He saw himself as a girl. The family story of their path of acceptance of a transgender child is told in the book Becoming Nicole, authored by Amy Ellis Nutt. Wyatt Maines eventually became Nicole Maines. She and her father, Wayne, are with us in the studio this morning. Later today, they will be giving a free presentation, question and answer session, and a book signing from noon to 2:30 at the Medford Library. That'll be in the large community meeting room at the Medford Library, 205 South Central Avenue in Medford. That's a presentation sponsored by the Diversity Programming Board at Rogue Community College. And they're reminding me that seating is limited to the first 200 people, so I thought I'd throw that in there. Wayne and Nicole, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Nicole, let's start with you. You were convinced you were a girl from a very, very young age. Can you remember your earliest thoughts about that?
Not really. You know, the way I describe it is gender is sort of that thing. It's the first sort of piece of your own identity that you get to form. And, you know, it's really interesting having a twin brother because at about the same age that, you know, he was realizing that he liked to play with trucks and action figures was the same age. I mean, obviously the same age, we were twins, but the same age that I was realizing that I didn't like to play with trucks and action figures. And I was always more drawn to, you know, girl things and playing dress up and makeup and girls' toys and Barbie dolls. And I felt that way for as long as I can remember. It's just, I've always associated more with the feminine and never really identified myself as a boy.
And I think one of the ironies that I noticed in the book was that you were actually, in some ways, the better athlete. I mean, we associate that with the boy, but you actually, I think there was an anecdote where you were playing baseball or something, and you hit every pitch, and your brother couldn't do it.
Yeah, we actually were just in upstate New York, unfortunately, for a family funeral. But we had all gotten together and we were playing wiffle ball with empty beer cans, and I showed him up. So it's good to know that that's still a factor in our dynamic.
So your mother started researching transgender issues on the internet, although at the time she wasn't even familiar with the word transgender. Mm-hmm. And then she came across the psychiatric term gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. That's something that's mentioned a lot in the book. What is that? And do you think that's a good description of what you were feeling and going through?
Yeah, well, gender dysphoria, I think, is a pretty accurate description, and it's a lot better than the former gender identity disorder. But gender dysphoria is basically describing, you know, exactly that, dysphoria surrounding your gender and your body. It's about recognizing a disconnect between how your physical body is presenting and, you know, how you identify yourself in your brain. And recognizing that disconnect and getting other people to acknowledge that disconnect can be hard, especially when you're at a young age, like, you know, 3 or 4.
And that's the story of the entire book, is getting people to recognize that. Wayne, so you had visions of bringing up twin boys, you know, Eagle Scouts and going fishing and hunting and, you know, basically doing guy things with your twin boys, but it was obvious really early that you know, Wyatt wasn't really with that program. So it doesn't seem like you reacted so much to me with denial as much as you did avoidance. Is that a good description of what happened with you?
I think that's a good way to describe it, but there was still some denial there. And it was a lot of fear. You know, even as I tried to accept it, I finally thought I was moving forward. I mean, I'm a pretty conservative guy, and, you know, my family were leather mill workers and loggers, and we weren't a lot of kids running around, boys running around dresses in our family, but I got to the point where then I just hoped that my son was just gay, because I started to do the research and realize how difficult life is for transgender people, and it still is. And that was a big move for me, you know. So, well, maybe he's just gay. You know, like, holy cow.
Progress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I realized I have this amazingly powerful, strong personality at six trying to tell me who she really is. And I didn't want to hear it. But I would have these arguments with her, like, you don't want to be a boy. And, yes, I do. And, you know, I'm a pretty smart, forceful guy, and I was losing every argument with a six-year-old because she was right and I was wrong. You know, you can't win when it's in your soul.
Well, we've all lost a few arguments with six-year-olds.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm still losing. So,
It's the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio, and our guests in the studio are Nicole and Wayne Maines. You can join the discussion, ask questions, or make comments by calling us at 800-838-3760 or send us an email during the live broadcast this morning at jx@jeffnet.org. So you were in upstate New York, and then you moved to Maine, and you were in a school that was called the Asa Adams School.
Yeah.
That was your elementary school. And it sounds like your mother, who really was kind of out in front on this this whole issue of having a transgender child, had an ally at that school. There was a sympathetic school counselor.
Yeah.
And things seemed to go pretty well until you were about in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And then things started getting really difficult for you. Can you take it from there?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first started transitioning publicly in school, we had been working with the faculty and staff at Asa Adams. And we had all sort of agreed that a gradual transition would be best. And so we spread out that transition over the course of elementary school. And everyone was cooperating and communicating and asking questions and had an open channel of dialogue about the whole situation, which was really helpful. And the guidance counselor, because none of us knew what was going on because it was like 2005. So there still wasn't a lot of information out there about transgender children, especially. So we were all kind of running around with our heads chopped off. And so we were kind of trying to figure out what was going on. And the guidance counselor, Lisa Earhart, was incredible. And she took it upon herself to find as much information as she could on her own time and relay it back to all of us. Of course, we were all trying to do our research, but she just really took it in her own hands and was so incredible and so helpful. And it's not like we were without problems for the first like 4 years of our transition, because of course kids can be mean and there are bullies, but she was such a good ally, but she was also such a good guidance counselor that she was always there, and she was always there to talk. She made the whole situation a lot easier for me. And in fifth grade, a student had moved to our school district the year before, and so he hadn't really been there for that gradual transition where we eased all the other students in with us. And his grandfather was part of a special interest Christian right group, and they didn't think that, you know, the quote-unquote boy using the girl's bathroom was okay at all. So basically he used his grandson as a political pawn and had him harass me and stalk me and eventually make a statement by having him follow me into the bathroom and, you know, telling me that his grandfather said that we don't have to have any faggots in our school in fifth grade. And that's really when the school stopped cooperating with us.
So he was really being egged on by his grandfather. So you say the school stopped cooperating with you. How did that happen? What did they stop doing?
Well, we had really come up with a plan to transition in every way, and she was using the girl's bathroom, and there were no problems. They grew up together, and immediately, in our mind, instead of punishing the young man for what he did, they took away Nicole's bathroom privileges, and that was bad enough, but then they put her in a staff bathroom. That seems to be one of the solutions around the country. To avoid developing the policy and procedure. Well, what that does to a child is says you're neither boy or girl, you're an other. And she was isolated from her classmates. And then, of course, what happened is it became newsworthy and our lives changed forever. And from 2007 in December, we were plastered over every newspaper and television show. And then there was no normalcy. And they became even more fearful, and she ended up having a bodyguard in elementary school. And that doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Did you think about going to a different school? I suppose the problems just would have repeated themselves in a new school.
We did. We ended up moving. My wife quit her job, and they moved 2 hours south, and they went to a different school. But Nicole went to school as a girl, but nobody knew she was transgender. And I let her really describe that for you. But the real issue is there is no place to go. You know, if you can't do it in the school we were in a college town, where were you going to go? And you have to quit your job. Families are trapped. And it's a really big challenge. But Nicole could tell you what that was like.
Yeah, well, since first grade, sort of coming out to people as transgender had been really easy for me. Because, you know, when you're young, there's a certain amount of kind of naivete and, you know, innocent bravery where, you know, you don't really understand that being, you know, transgender is a point of controversy, even when it shouldn't be. And so I would just walk up to other students and I would tell them, you know, oh, hi, my name's Wyatt. I'm a boy who wants to be a girl. What's your name? And, you know, they'd respond, oh, hi, I'm Timmy. I like red and trucks. And it was normal, and because nobody really thought, I mean, especially kids didn't really think anything of it. And then, you know, I hadn't really had to come out to other people, and I knew students would come to the school district, and I don't know, I guess it was like juicy gossip or something, but, you know, usually other students would tell new students who came that I was trans, and I didn't end up having to. So it kind of became common knowledge that I was the trans student. And so I'd always been out and open about who I was, for better or worse. And in middle school, I had to, you know, for the first time really be in the closet and have to actively think about, you know, keeping my trans status from people. And, you know, that was something I had never had to do before. And I didn't really know how to have relationships with my other classmates. Because, you know, when you move to a new school, everyone wants to know where you're from, what your old school was like, what your old friends were like. And I really couldn't disclose any of that and talk about myself because I couldn't reveal, you know, a huge reason like, oh, by the way, this is why I moved. And so rather than sort of deal with all that, I just kind of had to shut down and I stopped having friends over. When I lived in Orno, I was a huge fan of, you know, play dates and having sleepovers and going out and doing stuff with friends. And now I really just became a ghost. I went to school and I came home and I stopped having friends over and I didn't go anywhere with anybody else. And really it was just go to school, come home.
So you mentioned the gentleman who was sort of using his grandson to...
Gentleman's a nice term,
well,
isn't it?
Okay. I'll still use that term.
Yeah.
Because I've never met the guy. But anyway, so he was part of the Christian Civic League of Maine. Is
yes.
that correct? Tell us about that group.
Well, the Christian Civic League, it's a fairly large group in Maine, and actually... I think not everybody. There's a lot of great Christian people and people from different faiths that's helped our family. But they actually, because they targeted a young child, that person, Michael Heath, you know, you can look him up. He lost his job, and the Christian Civic League changed their name, and they lost a lot of membership because it was a time period where homophobia and transphobia were just ripe for the Tea Party had moved in, and Maine is a blue state typically, and now it's a blue-red state. And for some reason, we were picked as the family to go after. And I don't know. I have to think that sometimes you're chosen for other reasons. And of course, we fought back, and a lot of families don't have the ability or the financial capability to say, hey, we're not – my wife and I sat down and knew we were putting our family at risk and our kids at risk, but we also knew that we had to teach our children that in America, you get to fight for what you believe in, and we're not going to run. And I was very naive in thinking that this was going to be a short battle, and it ended up taking our lives over. And I don't want that. The reason we have that book is I don't, and tell our worst, my worst failures in life and personal stories, is because I don't want other families to have to go through what we had to go through. Mm-hmm. And it's happening all over the United States. So. Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Wayne Maines and his daughter, Nicole Maines. They're the subject of the book, Becoming Nicole. And they'll be speaking later today at noon at the Medford Library, sponsored by the Diversity Programming Board at Rogue Community College. Here on the Jefferson Exchange, you can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760. You alluded to this, but you ended up in court.
Yes. Yeah. So when we realized that, you know, the school couldn't and wouldn't be reasoned with, and they had stopped working with us. After we left, we filed a lawsuit on the grounds of unlawful discrimination, because under Title IX and the Maine Human Rights Act, gender identity was a protected status, and so they couldn't legally have done what they did. But and that went all the way to the highest court in the state of Maine, which had really never been done before. And it ended up taking 5 years. And, you know, it took so long because the court didn't want to be the first to, you know, decide which side of the fence this issue was going to fall on. So it took a long time. And we lost at Superior Court, and we appealed and went to the Maine State Supreme Court, and became the first case like this in the nation to be ruled in favor of a transgender student in a state Supreme Court.
And that ruling led to a number of states, California and I think also mm-hmm. Oregon, in adopting rules to protect transgender students in classes. In fact, we had a segment on our program about that earlier this year. Let's bring this back to a sort of a personal level, Wayne. So Nicole is being targeted in classrooms, and you're talking about taking this to court. At what point did this finally switch for you? And you said to yourself, okay, I have a transgender child. I have a daughter now, and I'm going to fight to protect her.
There were a lot of little defining moments. And one of the most important for me was when my wife had to quit her job and we moved our kids, and they lived in hiding in Portland, when I lived 2.5 hours north, and I knew that I was not going to be able to live with my family anymore. And quite frankly, over the next 5.5 years, I only saw my kids a day and a half a week. And I took them to a football game, and I let my son go to the snack bar for the first time in years by himself because he was safe. Nobody knew who we were. And then at halftime, Nicole started to tell me a very extremely sad story about transgender people. And I just start crying, you know, and I don't cry, you know. And I said, I got to do something. I can't, you know, and I try to tell people around the country, how can we protect our children if we don't have the capability to face our own fears? And understand, why am I afraid of my 5-year-old wanting to be who she needs to be? And why is somebody else afraid of a 8-year-old that wants to wear a dress? They're not hurting anybody. They're just being a kid. And as long as people work hard and be kind to everybody and pay taxes, I'm a happy man. And that was a turning point for me. But then they had a bathroom bill, just like North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the first time, I went public, and I proudly said, I'm the proud father of identical twins. One's a boy and a girl, and what you're trying to do is harming my child. And I've never looked back, you know. I still get pretty fired up because Nicole's fine. You see her here. She's beautiful. She's confident. She's well-spoken. But there's a lot of kids living in hiding all over America that don't have what she has.
So, Nicole, what about your brother, Jonas? We mentioned him earlier. You're a better ball player. But, you know, it's said that twins have an almost, you know, empathic level of communication. And how did your relationship with him develop over the years as you made the transition?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. You know, a lot of folks ask me, you know, what it was like having a twin brother. Like, how did you come out to your twin? How did your twin react? And, you know, I answer, he didn't. He didn't react because I didn't have to come out to him. And I don't know if that's because of that sort of like empathic or telepathic like twin nonsense that makes folks think we know where each other are at the same time. We feel each other's pain.
What's he doing right now?
Honestly, probably. Oh, no, he's at work, isn't he? Oh, he has to get up early.
There you go.
Oh.
Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
And, you know, he was the one person that I really never had to come out to, because I think, you know, we've just always been there with each other, you know, right from the start. And so we've always sort of been on the same wavelength, and he never really, you know, recognized me as like a boy or a girl. He just sort of recognized me as his twin. And whether I was his twin sister or his twin brother didn't really matter to him, because we were on each other's side. And so, yeah, he's always been really, really supportive. I think the only problem Jonas and I ever had regarding that stuff was when I changed my name. And it wasn't anything like, you know, he didn't want to call me Nicole. He could not, for the life of him, remember. And so I remember sitting down with him. We were playing video games. And in front of the TV, I wrote on a little note card, Nicole, and just set it down in front of there.
We've been talking with Wayne Maines and his daughter, Nicole Maines, some of the subjects of the book Becoming Nicole, authored by Amy Ellis Nutt. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Jefferson Exchange.